I want to talk about some things that will dramatically change your life, change your business, and change your income. I want to talk about perfect persuasion, how to get what you want when you want, and how to win friends for life. I know you want to be successful, and I know many times in your life you've been asking yourself, wow, what's taking so long? Are you tired of sticking your big toe in the pool of financial independence, and are you ready to jump in? That's what I want to explore today as we go through this process to help you understand exactly what you need to do to be successful in life and to be successful in your business. The challenge is that society has taught you the wrong things about wealth, the wrong things about success, and a lot of times you end up spinning your wheels. What does it take to be successful? I know you've met people that didn't seem that sharp, but were very, very successful in life. What did they have? What traits and talents did they possess? In fact, one of those that we know, of course, is the ability to persuade and influence. Everything you want in life is on the other side of persuasion. Have you ever gone to a presentation or been on the phone with somebody and you said, not going to buy, not going to buy, not going to buy, and you left buying everything? Or have you had a prospect that needed your product, liked your product, could afford your product, but never heard back from them? What's happening? They don't teach you how to persuade in schools, and picking it up on the street does not work. If you hear your boss say, do it or you're fired, that's not persuasion, that's coercion. Napoleon Hill, author of Think and Grow Rich, interviewed hundreds of millionaires. What do they have? What are they doing? What traits and talents do they possess? And of course, he wrote the book Think and Grow Rich, which you should be reading every year. It's an incredible book. He said that persuasion is the magic ingredient. Donald Trump says, master the art of persuasion. It's a critical skill for success. Jim Rohn says, when he learned how to persuade and communicate, he went from 6 digits to 7 digits. And most people don't know how to persuade. And that's what I want to focus on as we go through this process and understand success in life and success in business. When I ask people how much money they've lost with their inability to persuade, when they think back on their relationships and lost deals and lost sales, it's always well into the millions and millions of dollars. How can you master the art of persuasion? Are persuaders born? No, they are made. That's one of the reasons I founded the Persuasion Institute, to find out what's working, what's not working. Persuasion has changed dramatically in the last 20 years. Things are different now. And so I talk to your prospects after you've talked to them, after they've lied to you, I talk to them. What did they say? What were they thinking? Why didn't they buy from you to get the truth? It's fascinating to me to find out why people do what they do and to find out the true world of persuasion and influence. Closing skills don't work. Sure, you can learn another closing skill, and there's a time and place for that, but a closing skill is like trying to get a kiss after a bad date. I want to focus on what is working. What makes your business successful? It's interesting to note that here in the United States, 96% of all businesses fail within 5 years. Now, I hope that motivates you. Wow, 96%. This is a great place to start a business. There's a lot of great entrepreneurs. 96%. And what happened is that bothered the Small Business Administration, a government entity, and Dun & Bradstreet, trying to figure out, why do so many businesses fail? And so independently, they spent millions of dollars trying to figure out, what does it take to make a business successful? Why do businesses fail? And together, independently, they came up with the same conclusion, and here it was. All businesses fail because of a lack of sales. Duh. That's what it comes down to. Lack of sales. Sales, in the reality, fixes everything. If somebody needs an assistant, you need to improve your product, you need more help, you need better packaging, more marketing funds. Sales fixes everything. And so I want to explore what it takes to be successful. So many people focus on their business to make sure they have their website up and the fax machine and a location and all these things that are important, but not as critical as getting your product into the hands of the people that need it most, persuading them that they need and want and can use your product. So what I want to spend some time with today is what I call the success blueprint. The 4 critical areas that you need to master to be successful in life and in business. It's amazing to me how many people get into different businesses, whether it be real estate or network marketing or becoming an entrepreneur, and they try it and they fail and they say, well, that doesn't work. And we say, no, that doesn't work for you. We know it works. You look at the industry that you want to become a specialist in, that you want to perfect. I can show you countless millionaires, countless success stories doing the same things that you're doing. So we have to back up and have a reality check and realize it's not the business, it's not the industry, it's not the leads, it is you. There's certain skills that you need to master to be successful. And that's what I want to focus on, the four critical areas that you need to master to be successful in life and to be successful in your business. Because it's all about understanding yourself and understanding change. Now, some of you resist change, but when I say, do you want to change your income? You say yes. And this was a big turning point for me early in my career when I had a great opportunity to do some speaking and training with a gentleman and a speaker named Jim Rohn. Incredible man, incredible speaker. I just started doing some promotion and some speaking for him. And they called a late night meeting. It was at a restaurant. There's probably about 9 or 10 of us. And I got to sit close to Jim just to hear his wisdom. And there was a lull in the conversation. And he turned to me and it kind of shocked me when he said, Kurt, tell me about your goals, your dreams, your aspirations. What is it that you want to accomplish with your life? And, you know, it took me off guard talking about, well, I wanted this and do this and wasn't happening as fast as I wanted. And there's a few people to blame along the way. And he stopped me mid-sentence and it cut me like a knife when he said, Kurt, for things to change, you must change. And for things to get better, you must get better. Now, doesn't that ring true? Or maybe add a word to that. For your income to change, you must change. And for your income to get better, you must get better. That is the critical key. Let's talk about the critical areas that you need to change and improve with what we call the success blueprint. The very first area is what we call self-mastery, or you can define as self-persuasion, your motivation, your mindset, your thoughts. With the question being, have you ever had a day when you didn't feel like doing the things you know you needed to do? For most people, that's every day. Where does that come from? Success and wealth is an open book test. There's no secret. You just need to follow the system. You need to get yourself to do the things you know you need to do to stay on track, to understand the mindset and principle of wealth. What are you attracting in your life? It's amazing how people, they want to be wealthy, they want to be successful, and they have that thought every now and then, but 90% of their thoughts are focused on debt and the pain and trying to get away from something. That's what they're attracting in their life. It's critical to understand self-persuasion. You need to understand mindset and the philosophy of wealth. When we talk about wealth and belief systems, you have to know that you have conflicting beliefs. What your parents and society think about wealth is stuck in your mind somewhere. About money being the root of all evil, or it's not okay to be wealthy. But on the other hand, you say, no, I want that. That is like having a torpedo with two different guidance systems, telling it what to do, and of course it would never hit the target. And that's what's important to understand when we think about wealth. It's interesting to note that many people, when they see someone driving in a nice car or in a nice home, they look at them and they say negative derogatory things about them. Oh, they're not happy. They stepped on people. They're probably a trust fund baby. They're drug dealers. No, when you see someone that's very successful, and here's a very important principle of wealth, in your family or a stranger, you say good for them. Because you cannot become what you despise. You cannot become what you resent. You cannot become what you don't like. You're feeding your subconscious mind that wealth is not okay. So mindset is critical to understand what you need to accomplish and what you need to do. One thing we notice with very successful people is that they follow their heart. It doesn't matter what other people say around them. Isn't it interesting how you tell your family and friends about your goals, your dreams, your aspirations, the things that you want to accomplish, you're all excited, and the people closest to you, the people that should support you the most, will spit on your dreams. They'll pull you down. We call them the living dead. We call them parasites. You can sit next to Aunt Edna at a family gathering, and you can not even talk to her, and you can feel her sucking the energy right from you. You follow your heart. You stay on track. Because people will make fun of you on the way up, and they'll resent you once you get there. That's just reality. That's part of life. One of my favorite examples is Bill Gates, founder of Microsoft. You probably know when he was 17, he was going to Harvard University. Great university, but his heart was telling him, you need to start a computer software company. Every home's going to have a computer. If you don't do it, somebody else will. Can you imagine talking to his guidance counselor? I'm going to quit Harvard. I'm going to do this. Can you imagine what they would say? No, you can't quit. Get your 4-year degree and go work for a large company like Enron because they'll take care of you. We know that's not the case. So mindset, follow your heart, work on your belief systems. That's a fundamental aspect of success. And this is the one area that people tend to ignore but have the greatest challenge with because they are in denial. fact, as I interview millionaires and I research what I call millionaire psychology, millionaires agree the biggest obstacle to wealth and success is mindset. And one of the biggest things that's giving you a roadblock is fear. What are you afraid of? Now, it's interesting to note that a newborn baby is only born with two fears. Two fears. The fear of falling and the fear of loud noises. Those are the only two fears a newborn baby has. So all these fun little fears you've picked up along the way, they've been learned. And so the good news is that you can unlearn them. Very important to understand. You've picked up the fear of success. That's a big fear. What are you afraid of? A nice car, a nice home? But people are afraid of success because if they're successful, they'll have to maintain it. They'll keep up to keep being successful. And their psyche can't handle that. The fear of failure, the fear of public speaking, the fear of death. Isn't it amazing that the fear of public speaking is greater than the fear of death? And Jerry Seinfeld, the comedian, makes fun of it and says, people would rather be in the casket than giving the eulogy. That makes no sense. And then, of course, there's the fear of criticism. The fear of criticism will destroy you. You're so concerned about what other people will think. And Napoleon Hill said, the fear of criticism robs man of his initiative, destroys his power of imagination, limits his individuality, and takes away his self-reliance. You need to focus on what you need to do. You can't be concerned what other people think. You wouldn't be so concerned what other people think of you when you realize how little they do think of you. Think about that. And then the last thing that we notice as we study successful persuaders and successful millionaires is they all enjoy a very extensive personal development program. Because one of the things that has cost you millions of dollars in your life, I already know what it is. It's the phrase, oh, I'll figure it out on my own. What are you, crazy? Can you really risk losing hundreds of thousands, probably millions of dollars, trying to figure it out on your own? That's not how successful people think. Imagine Donald Trump, a billionaire in real estate. When he has a challenge, does he figure out on his own? Does he go to the Yellow Pages to find the cheapest person possible? No. He thinks like a person that's successful. Pays whatever it takes, he finds the best, because he knows his return on an investment will be 10 times greater than that. And of course, there's book and tapes. That's a great start. The challenge is you can't learn to play basketball, for example, by reading a book. It's a great start, but you actually need to get out there. You need to have a coach. You need to have somebody walk you through it. That's where the exponential growth happens. And I encourage all of them, books, CDs in your cars, going to the seminars, working with people that are successful, working with coaches. That is what successful people do. Michael Jordan, a great basketball player, needed a coach because what we think we're doing right and wrong is very different than what the prospect thinks about us. So the first step in Success Blueprint is personal mastery. The second is you need to master persuasion skills. You need to develop the confidence and charisma to understand what people are thinking and doing. Are they lying to you? Why are they lying to you? What are the psychology of objections? Why do they do what they do? Why aren't they calling you back? Again, everything you want in life is on the other side of persuasion. So my question to you, as you try to persuade others, and believe me when I tell you, we're all in persuasion. As parent, teacher, leader, managers, we're all in persuasion. Are you a guest? Are you a pest? Or are you a pushover when you're talking to somebody? Afraid to push too hard? Or maybe you're pushing too hard and you become a pest instead of a welcomed guest. Imagine if you could take that power of persuasion and put it into an aerosol can. Can you imagine that? Someone, you're talking to someone, well, you know, I don't think that, psh, and you're like, oh, I'll take three. That's what I want to give you the right tools. See, what we're finding in the world of persuasion is most people use the same persuasive tool over and over and over again. Most people use 2 to 3 persuasive tools over and over and over again. Top producers, maybe 5 to 6. Here at the Persuasion Institute, we've identified over 120 different persuasion tools. Because as Abraham Maslow said, if the only tool in your toolbox is a hammer, you treat everybody like a nail. You need to have the right tools. For example, many of you probably own a post-hole digger and you've used it once, but that was the only tool that would have worked for you. And even if you only use one tool once a year, but it secures that deal, it persuades more people, you need to have it in your arsenal. Because when you look at the keys of the piano of persuasion, you're playing chopsticks. What I want you to do is to play Mozart. And that's why I study persuasion influence. I've always been in sales. And one of the things I noticed is that I was very offended by some of the techniques they were teaching me. I would call manipulation. I said, I wouldn't do that to anybody in my family. Why would I do it to anybody else? It doesn't feel right. And that's when I realized that there's a different way to persuade. The new world of persuasion is this. And write this down. 95% of persuasion involves a subconscious trigger. It just feels right. I like this person. I trust this person. I don't trust this person. I don't like this person. It doesn't feel right. I'm going to leave the store right now. I'm going to leave the internet site right now. It doesn't feel right. And we have found color and smell and word choice and nonverbal behavior, all these different things come into play when you're trying to persuade somebody. So my goal at the Persuasion Institute was to get all the tools, but what I noticed as I went to all the seminars and read all the books I could get my hands on and read all the different social psychology studies was there's many different camps out there. And they're all claiming that they're the most important. And what I realized is that they are important, but they're just a small piece of the persuasion pie. For example, there's the Dale Carnegie People Skills Camp. Now, people skills is important. We have found that 66% of people downsized are downsized because of their inability to work with people. Now, that's interesting. Now, people skills are important, but many of you I know are making a lot of friends, but selling and persuading no one. So it is a small piece of the persuasion pie, but I know what it's like to make a lot of friends. One of my telemarketing jobs I used to do, I was calling people and making friends, but selling nothing. In fact, this one lady found it was my birthday. She sent me her birthday card. I said, I don't want your birthday card. I want a credit card. So again, important, but only a small piece of the persuasion pie. Then there's the ones out there, Brian Tracy and Zig Ziglar, talking about closing skills. There is a time and place for those, but again, closing skills, like I mentioned earlier, is like trying to get a kiss after a bad date. Very important, but there's a lot of things that lead up to doing that, like connecting and building trust. Then there are those who just use power. Do it or you're fired. Do it or else. You do it because you have to. Power is a scary thing. Power is neither good nor bad. It's how you use it. Now, if you use power in a good way, for example, when you become the expert, people will want to be persuaded by you. That gives you a certain power by a degree or wearing a white coat or understanding that you are the expert. That's important to you as a persuader. It's how you use it. Power can be a critical thing. Here's the thing to understand is that people want to be persuaded deep down. They want to trust that you're the expert, that you can lead them in the right direction. Then there are those that, no, just have trust. Get people to trust you. Now, that is important. I'll give you that. But a small piece of the persuasion pie. Now, trust is interesting because trust has dropped 6 points in the last 5 years. Trust levels at an all-time low. See, 20 years ago, it was, I trust you, give me a reason not to. Now, it's, I don't trust you, give me a reason to trust you. Then there's understanding personality types. Small piece, important, but a small piece of the persuasion pie. Then there's those who use fear, scare them into doing it. Now, there's a time and place for fear. For example, a dentist that might say, only floss the teeth you want to keep. That works, but that's not the only tool you need. Some people just use incentives and rewards. If you do it, I'll give you this. If you eat your vegetables, I'll give you ice cream. If you read your book in school, I'll give you pizza. Very dangerous, because once you reward somebody for doing something, they'll no longer do it without that reward. One of the reasons the children aren't reading in school is because they expect a reward for doing it. And then there's the world of NLP, neuro-linguistic programming. Great information on the world of persuasion, but again, only a small piece of the persuasion pie. Because understand, as you master the world of persuasion, that persuasion has changed, your prospect has changed. There's three critical things you have to understand in how your prospect's changed. First of all, they're bombarded with over 5,000 persuasive messages a day, according to Advertising Age magazine. Everywhere you look, there's an ad, there's something on the internet, there's someone trying to persuade you, so people become numb. Everywhere you look, people are trying to persuade you. Now, number one is bombarded. Number two is they're more skeptical than ever before. They are assuming you will try to take advantage of them. And number three, they're more educated than ever before, both in degrees and in information. See, 20 years ago, when you went to go buy a car, you had to believe the salesperson. Now, you can look on the internet, you can find the manufacturer's price, you can find out what they're charging down the street. That gives you power. So understand the world of persuasion, you have to understand some of the major obstacles. Most of it's lack of knowledge. Most people just don't know the tools. They've never learned the tools. And the big one is what we call the woebegone effect. Social psychologists have identified this as natural human behavior where we rate our skills higher than they actually are. You go into a room of high school seniors and say, okay, rate your driving skills. 95% are above average. Most people rate themselves better looking than the average person. Most persuaders rate themselves higher than they actually are in their persuasion skills. So I know you have great strengths and great weaknesses, but we need to be able to identify those to help you out. Doesn't matter what you think. It's what the end user or the prospect thinks. That is the critical thing to understand as we go through this process to understand step-by-step the world of persuasion. Because many times, people develop shortcuts in persuasion, knee-jerk reactions. That's why most persuasion is subconscious. Those are the things that we want to teach you. Understanding marketing, understanding the shortcut, understanding human behavior, understanding those knee-jerk reactions, understanding why people don't call you back. And a big thing to understand as we talk about the world of persuasion is this. Are we mostly emotional or logical creatures? Now, we like to say, oh, no, we are very emotional. Some people, no, we're very logical. The reality is we're mostly emotional and we're some logical, but most people can't tell the difference. In fact, in one study, we found that we took a very controversial topic, went to a college class and divided the class in half. Half the class did logical appeals and the other half did emotional appeals. And they'd show them to other students. And all the students had to do was to identify, is that logical appeal or is that an emotional appeal? They couldn't figure it out. So they showed them again, trying to figure out what was going on. And this is what they found out eventually was this. If they agreed, it was logical. If they disagreed, it was emotional. Wow, isn't that interesting? And that is the world of persuasion. If you take somebody, for example, and put them at a table to evaluate the restaurant food, and they don't like the person across from them, it'll affect the valuations of the food. Or pricing something at $9.97 versus $10. Or they get different results in blind taste tests versus when they can actually see the product. Persuasion is critical, and that's number two in your success blueprint. So we had self-persuasion, self-mastery is number one. Number two is persuasion. Now let me define persuasion as what you do when you say, because number three is influence, and leadership. Influence is a higher form of persuasion. Influence is who you are, your trust, your charisma, your passion, your ability to work with people. When you have influence with someone, you don't need facts or figures or statistics or a persuasive technique. They will just do it. And part of the big ones under influence is trust. Understanding how trust works. I mentioned earlier that trust is at an all-time low. In fact, the top trusted professions are pharmacist, nurse, and firefighters. But even that only comes in around 60%. Clergy's around 50, college teachers around 50. It gets lower and lower. And so what we do at the Persuasion Institute is look at the different professions because your profession alone will dictate some different trust. You know, stockbrokers are at 19, Congress, 17, real estate agents and investors, 16%, lawyers, 14%, insurance, 11%, chiropractors are down there too, advertisers, network marketers at 9%, car sales at 5%. Wow. So how do you build that trust? Now, I could spend all day on trust, but let me give you a few pointers to understand trust and how trust works. First of all, character is critical. And that's what most people think about trust is character. That's your integrity, your honesty, your sincerity. That's you on your inside. That's your self-discipline. That's the ability to get yourself to do the things that you want to do, even when you don't feel like doing them and no one's watching. What is your character? How are you coming across? And it doesn't matter what the reality is, it's what the perception is. So the first thing to really understand is character. The second one is competence. Your knowledge, your intelligence, your ability. How do you come across? Do they feel like they can trust you through your competence? If your neighbor has great character, built an airplane in their garage, and wants you to be on the maiden voyage, you're thinking, okay, are they competent? Is they going to fly? Even though they have great character, you might not trust them just based on competence. And with competence, you have to understand that you are the expert. You need to act like the expert. Think of lawyers or mechanics who are the experts, and they say, you need to do this, this, and this. Or the mechanic says, well, your blinker fluid is low. Even though that's not true, a lot of people will believe him because of their expert. Now, I don't want you to do that. I want you to be the expert, and I want you to have great character, and that all comes under competence. Being competent. Is it real? Is it perceived? A little of both. The perception is critical. In fact, in one study, they took children and showed them a video of two other kids taking a math test. And the teacher was walking around the room. And one student, she said, don't forget to carry your 10s. And that's the only comment she made to both students. Then they turned off the video and the teacher said to the students, both students scored exactly the same on the math test. They're both equally smart. Who do you want to be your math partner? And they all chose a student that was not corrected. Perception is critical. Next thing to understand with trust is confidence. Your assurance, your belief, your conviction. J. Conrad Levinson of Guerrilla Marketing fame says confidence is one of the number one reason people buy. They want to feel that you're confident. Now, I didn't say cocky. Many times you think you're coming across as confident, but you're coming across as cocky. Now, there's a fine line. Cocky's more when you're concerned about you and that you know more than them, that you're not concerned about serving them versus being confident. Because once you cross that line to cocky, the doors of persuasion will swing close. What about your credibility? Your past experience with them? Have you been truthful? What have other people said about you? Now, one interesting thing that has come up on the persuasion radar is that when somebody looks at your product or service, they're looking for a weakness. They're looking for a flaw. And when they don't find a flaw or a weakness, they have the knee-jerk reaction of, oh, it's too good to be true. Even if it is true, it doesn't matter. Once they have that knee-jerk reaction, they will run. So if they're looking for a weakness, my message to you is give them one. The moment you reveal a weakness, your credibility and trust goes up. Now, I'm not talking about revealing that you're an axe murderer, or convicted felon, or your product doesn't really work. I'm talking about minor things, a weakness that you can turn into a strength. Avis, we're number two, and we try harder. Weakness into strength. Smucker's Jam, it's a terrible name. They make fun of it. They make it a weakness. With a name like that, it has to be good. Or Listerine, the taste you hate twice a day. L'Oreal Makeup, because I'm worth it. VW during the 60s, they said, this car is so slow, you'll never get a speeding ticket. For example, if you're talking to somebody and you're just two or three people in your company, you're going against a corporation of hundreds of people, reveal that weakness. Look, we're not as big as them, but weakness into strength. You will not get lost in the cracks. You'll have my cell phone 24 hours a day. We'll work endlessly until we've sealed the deal. Weakness into strength increases your trust. So important to understand. For example, if I moved into your area, so we talk about these different areas of trust, and I say, I need a dentist. Can you recommend a dentist? I need a dentist I can trust. So, oh, I know a great dentist, has great character, belongs to my church group, just a really good person on the inside. Not very competent, though. Last time I was there, he stuck a needle completely through my cheek. Would you trust that dentist? No. Or you go to another neighbor. Can you recommend a dentist? Oh, I know the best dentist in the state, graduated top of his class, one of the best, very, very competent. Just doesn't have much character, though. In fact, you'll have to wait a few months because they're in jail for insurance fraud. Because when you only need two or three fillings, they put in five or six. Would you trust that dentist? No. Or what if you went to a dentist that didn't have any confidence? You're laying in the chair, you have the bib on, and they put the x-rays in the little light. And the dentist says, you know, I don't know. I've never been good at reading these. Although, I think you need a root canal right here. What do you think? No trust. You're probably running out. What about credibility? You walk into a dental office. There's a degree on the wall from somewhere in the Caribbean. Very little furniture. A sign on the wall that says, cash only. We don't take insurance. We don't take credit cards. We don't take check. The dentist comes in a black leather jacket and a carpenter's tool belt with a hammer and the screwdriver. You would run. There would be no trust. Never assume people trust you. As we monitor the persuasive situations at the Persuasion Institute, we have a persuader and a prospect. They go through and we talk to the prospect. Then we talk to the persuader. We have a series of questions. We ask the persuader, did they trust you? And the persuader says 9 out of 10 times, yep, develop trust. They'll be calling me back. And then we talk to the prospect. Did you trust them? And they said no. There was only trust 1 out of 10 times. If you see the difference, 1 out of 10s versus 9 out of 10, don't assume people trust you. Even though you're good people, you deserve trust, doesn't mean people will trust you. And it's a critical aspect under the world of influence, along with passion. Passion, more than anything else, will recruit the hearts and minds of the people you talk to. It's interesting as we coach and we work with people and develop scripts that I can give a script to one person and coach them and work them through it. And it has an 80-90% success rate. And then that person gives it to somebody else. We see this all the time in network marketing. So we train them, it works, and they hand it to somebody else, and it didn't work. And they say, oh, the script doesn't work. We say, no, hey, the script works. And then I went back to the drawing board to figure it out. And one of the things it came back to was that passion about the product or service, knowing what they were talking about. And the question you need to ask yourself, are you singing the song, or are you singing the words? Can they feel you singing the song, or are you just going through motions and singing the words? Passion is critical, and enthusiasm and optimism all fall under influence. So, just to review on the success blueprint, we've had self-mastery number one, persuasion number two, influence number three, and number four is presentation and communication skills. How are you coming across on the phone, face-to-face, one-on-one, in group presentations? Those are all critical to your success. In fact, one aspect I want to spend some time on is what I call verbal packaging, the leverage of language. Every word you use will either attract or repel the person you're talking to. Words trigger emotions. And when you use the right words, you come across as more credible, competent, and convincing. Mark Twain said the difference between the right word and wrong words is the difference between lightning and a lightning bug. Every word matters. Just by changing the word repair to fix, 20% increase in response. Every word matters. Words create emotions. In fact, close your eyes. Well, not if you're driving, but close your eyes and think about these words for a second and the emotions that they trigger. Murder, hate, depressed, cancer, despair. Do you feel that? Let's turn it around. Wealth, happiness, inspired, joy, wealth, success. Do you feel the difference? It was the word and how I said the word. It matters. It matters. It's amazing when I go into a steakhouse and I say, what's the difference between your ribeye and your filet mignon? And they say, well, the ribeye is a little more marbled. Hello? That's fat. They don't say that because that would turn you off. Or they're no longer used cars. They're pre-owned. In fact, I saw one company advertising as pre-loved. Didn't know if it was for a used car or a personal ad, but that is critical. We don't fire people anymore. They're downsized. Even when I give a college final in the university, I don't call it a final. It has a bad association trigger. I call it a celebration of knowledge. Doesn't work very well, but it's a lot of fun to try. And even the airline industry, wow, are they great at packaging their words. You're sitting there putting your seatbelt on and you watch the little video and it says, in the event of a water landing. Hello? Water landing? It doesn't say when the plane hits the water and the wings rip off. It's just, oh, in the event of a water landing. Or realize there's no bathrooms on board, there's lavatories. They never clean a plane, they refresh it. There's no life preservers on board, there's flotation devices. You look at that little barf bag, it says for motion discomfort. The plane's never late, it's delayed. The plane's never broke, it's mechanical difficulties. And they've never lost my luggage. It's been misplaced. Does it matter? Yes, it does. For example, you'd never want to use the word if. What a weak word. Try when. Don't use try. Use will. Don't use could. Use can. Don't use hope. Use guarantee. They all make a difference. Never use the word but. That destroys your ability to persuade. It negates everything in front of it. This is a great product because of this, this, and this, and this. But you've destroyed yourself. You look great tonight, dear, but you're sleeping on the couch. Now, a couple power words I want to throw at you is the word fact. The fact is, the facts show, it's one of those power words that really draw people in and it's very persuasive. Another one is the word because. The way the human brain works is we want a reason. And when you use the word because, we are relieved because you're going to give us a reason. And even if it's not a valid reason, the word because works. In fact, Elaine Langer, she was a social psychologist at Harvard University, did a great study to test compliance and word choice, where she went to the university and she would wait in line where students were going to make photocopies, wait until there's five or six students, and try to cut in line. The first time she said, excuse me, may I cut in line? I'm in a rush. And 60% let her. Then she changed it up. Excuse me, may I cut in line? Because, that's the only difference, because I'm in a rush, went from 60% to 94%. And then here's the interesting one. She tried it again, with a different line at a different time. Excuse me, may I cut in line because I need to make some copies. Duh. Why else do you think she's in line? Went to 90% compliance, a few percentage points difference. Because is a powerful word. One thing we noticed that many companies say, hey, you call up and you say, oh, I have a few questions. They say, let me transfer you to sales. Hello? The resistance is going up. The moment they sense you're going to try to persuade them, they will resist you. You send them to a consultant. You don't say contract, you say agreement. You don't say sign here, you say okay the paperwork. You don't say I'm going to sell you when you get involved. You're not the cheapest, you're the most economical. You're not the most expensive, you're top of the line. I can go in all day. Every word you use will either attract or repel the people you're talking to. Verbal packaging is everything. In fact, let's have some fun with this. Don't call somebody stupid. Don't call them ignorant. Let's verbally package it. You could say something like, sharp as a marble, all foam, no beer. Or how about too much yardage between the goalposts? Or one of my favorites, got into the gene pool while the lifeguard wasn't watching. How about, if brains were taxed, he'd get a rebate. Or studied for a blood test and failed. Or the wheel is spinning, but the hamster's dead. Or you could say, the gates are down, the lights are flashing, but the train isn't coming. Verbal packaging is critical. That also includes your tonality, your rate. Faster is better than slow. You need to vary your rate, but you want to do a faster pace. Vocal fillers, sure, we use a few, but the more you use, it decreases your credibility. Pauses, understanding telephone skills, how to get people to call you back, when to leave a message, how to leave a message. All these are very, very important in your success. So I'm telling you right now, as you look at your success blueprint, we talked about your self-mastery, your self-persuasion skills. Number two, we talked about your persuasion skills. Number three, we talked about influence and trust. And number four, your presentation skills. All critical for your success. So my message to you is, if your business or your company is not as successful as you want to be, or if you're on a commission-based job and you're not making all the sales that you want to, I guarantee you it's one of these four areas. And so you need to sit down and figure out which one is it. It's probably a combination of all four. We all have different things that we need to work on. My first book, Maximum Influence, I focused on, okay, what was working? On theory. And now we've been focusing on, okay, how do you apply it? How do you use it? Theory's great, but how do you apply it? How do you use it? So what I've been focusing on the last 2 years, and I need your help to do a little research. Research to help me out. My next book's going to be called Persuasion IQ, the top traits, talents, characteristics of top persuaders. I interview, I monitor top persuaders. I watch people. I'm a secret shopper. What are they doing? What's working? What's not working? And categorizing all those different things. What are they doing? What are they saying? Where are they spending their time? What is working? And I'm compiling all that. I want to make this a win-win situation. I'm doing research, and part of my research is getting persuasion IQs. I need over 10,000 persuasion IQs from people all over the world. What are your greatest strengths, and what are your greatest weaknesses, and how can you work on that? But I do want to warn you, this is not for the faint of heart. This is for someone who persuades for a living. Even though we all do, some people think they don't, and they want to double their income. Because we're finding with the students that we're working with, they tend to double and triple their income. Because you could learn all the real estate skills or everything about the internet or everything about network marketing. That's great. Those are all great vehicles to success. The challenge is you don't have the gas. You don't have the persuasion and the influence and the trust skills, the presentation skills to pull it off. And when we can give you the gas of that vehicle to success, you will be very, very successful. So very simple. A couple things I want you to do. Go to persuasioniq.com. Now, let me spell it for you. It's one of those words that sometimes people misspell. It's persuasionIQ.com. persuasionIQ.com. Go there. It'll probably take you 15, 20 minutes. Are we going to sugarcoat it? No, we're going to give you the truth. But wouldn't you rather have me tell you what you're doing right and what you're doing wrong than a prospect never to call you back? That's what I want to focus on. I want to give you that power, that charisma, that confidence to persuade in any situation, to double and triple your income. Help me with this research. Help me identify the characteristics and traits of top persuaders. I love talking about persuasion. I appreciate your time today. These are critical aspects. These are critical skills. It really bothered me early on in my career as I realized that I went after a degree and after a graduate degree that they didn't give me the critical, valuable skills I needed to be successful in life and business. And it frustrated me that they didn't teach me these basic skills. That's why I want to go around and teach people the skills that are so critical. Now, degrees are great, but that's just a start. These are the skills that increase your income, that change your life, that help your relationships. Persuasion is what you need. Again, everything you want in life is on the other side of persuasion. I want you to master these skills. I want you to look at your success blueprint. Just to review, the success blueprint, the four areas: personal mastery, persuasion skills, influence skills, and presentation skills. What area do you need to work on? Because as we help you double your income, you have to realize you can talk to twice as many people, which takes twice the amount of time, or I can double your close rate. Talk to fewer people, have more success, you'll have more time, you'll be more successful. It's amazing how many people, well, I don't have time to learn time management, or I don't have enough sales to learn sales training or persuasion training. These are the skills. If you're not making the income you want, it comes back to these things. Sales and persuasion fix almost everything. And that's why it's so exciting to me. I want you to master these skills. I want you to help build instant trust when you talk to people. How to engineer persuasive presentations. We have found exactly what you need to say in every 5 minutes. How often you need to get a yes. How long your call to action needs to be. How often you need to use a story. How often you use a statistic or an example or a testimony. Putting these all things together to give you the system, to give you the formula. System is the critical thing, a system that you can follow. Go to persuasioniq.com, fill it out, fill out your IQ. Your results are instant online, and I guarantee you it'll be time well spent because you're going to lose some things that's going to change your life, change your ability to persuade and influence. And when you do that, not only are you going to change your income, change your confidence, change your happiness, but you can also use these skills to make the world a better place.